From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. In the final pod of 2019-20, we are looking back on the highs and the lows of a mammoth campaign. We're giving out the awards the Premier League players really want to win, and we're already looking ahead to next season. 380 matches in 352 days. Congratulations if you made it all the way. The longest season in FPL history is officially over. There is so much for us to reflect on, so much for us to look forward to as well, with such a quick turnaround between seasons. So a very warm welcome along for our final hurrah of this marathon campaign. I'm going to go through this week's panellists in order of ranking from lowest to highest. So joining me, Kelly Summers. I wasn't bottom though. First up, it is Sam Parking. Sam, if only the season had ended at the end of August, hey?
Can't believe you've done that to me. Early doors. yeah, great start. Brilliant finish. Chuffed with the way it ended, but the middle was a disaster, quite frankly.
I should say at this point, you did actually beat me in game week 38 plus. However, I would be next in this list of terms of rankings, but 36 points ahead of me was a certain Tom Williams.
Hi, Kelly.
Hello. You did have a very good end to the season. Maybe not the last game, but we'll talk about that very shortly. But finally, a metaphorical drum roll, please. We are in the presence of, I think we can now say, FPL royalty, top of our FPL podcast guest mini league, and 3,501 in the entire world, Sam Bonfield of FPL family. Sam, congratulations.
Thank you, Kelly. Yeah, ended well, didn't it, in the end? All the stress was worth it.
Well, we will talk a little bit more about the many highs, and for me, and probably Sam Parkin as well, the many lows very shortly. But Sam, like myself and 300,000 other FPL managers, you did play your free hit in the final game week. How did that go? Mine was, I think it's safe to say, quite mixed.
It was definitely a success. I mean, I was 26 points better off than I would have been had I not played my free hit. So from that point of view, it definitely won me this mini league for a start, and definitely kind of put me back inside that top 5k. Yeah, so it was a success. It was just the most stressful thing ever. I'm never ever holding a chip till the final week again. Honestly, more stress than I could deal with last week for sure.
Yeah, I know that feeling as well. At least though, with the stress, it's only over 90 minutes rather than over a number of days. That's what I found anyway. Well, 320,000 managers also played their triple captains, one of which was you, Tom. How did that go? I'm saying that kind of with gritted teeth because I really feel for you on this.
Yeah, it went okay. It could have gone better. So I had to choose between Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne when it came to strapping the triple captaincy armband on someone's bicep. And I went for Sterling, sadly for me, because his form going into the game was better. Obviously, we know how it all worked out. I actually had a bit of a shocker apart from those two and Fernandes. No one else scored any points for me. So in the end, Sterling, even though he only scored the one goal, did get me out of a bit of a hole. But it also felt quite fitting that I should end the season cursing a poor captaincy decision, because that was a consistent feature of my entire season.
And also kind of cursing, getting the wrong Manchester City player. I'm sure FPL managers listening to this will have been through that pain many a times this season. While the game week's highest scorers did come from players who we probably should have expected it from, given form and fixtures. As we just mentioned there, Kevin De Bruyne, he was the game week's highest scorer with 19 points. And also 16 points for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And Sam Parkin, despite being the lowest, I should now say you did have a really strong game week. You actually got more points than me and only 2 points less than Sam, and you had both of those players.
Yeah, chuffed with it without a chip. I think to get 78 points, I finished strongly, going into the summer with optimism. And Aubameyang was a choice over Kane and Jesus, so it paid off. And I was probably going to be coming on and saying nice things about Nketiah today if that square pass would have ended up in Aubameyang getting his hat trick, which I think would have nudged him ever so closer to Jamie Vardy as well. So it was all set up in that second half for him to get an absolute handful, but it didn't quite happen. But yeah, 78 points after a calamitous few weeks. I'm chuffed with that.
I bet you were feeling quite excited when it was 3-0 in that game so early on.
I was thinking about you, Kelly, as well, reeling as each goal struck the back of the net. But yeah, Watford obviously rallied, and the majority of the chances were down the other end. I think the other takeaway is we spoke about going for cheaper defenders because there wasn't a great deal of value. And I think the three clean sheets across the league showed you that that was the right decision to stock up on the assets in midfield and attack.
I think at this point, a few listeners might remember that a few weeks ago, I suggested that maybe Arsenal defenders would be on our radar next season. That performance on Sunday, although they did have one eye, I'm sure, in the FA Cup final, will maybe make listeners think I'm a bit balmy because, yeah, didn't look too solid. Anyway, talking of Kevin De Bruyne, we have to give him a mention there because that mammoth final day points haul did mean that he dethroned Mo Salah at the top of the FPL rankings. 3.65 million managers enjoyed his final big haul. Sam Bonfield, what a season from him. He was the only player that remained in my team throughout the entire campaign.
Yeah, mine too. And I think back to game week one when I first, you know, with our first teams that we had at the end of last summer, and he was the player I had because I couldn't afford to have Sterling. And I was so worried about going a season without Sterling. And actually, KDB has been an absolute legend all season. He might have had some games where he sat a bit deeper, but as far as the Pep roulette goes, we've pretty much been guaranteed KDB in the starting lineup with only a couple of misses for the whole season. The assist record now is his. He has had an unbelievable season, and from an FPL point of view, next year he will be one that is probably going to make it straight back into my 11 again.
Well, King Kevin wasn't the only big winner in FPL this season. Let's see who else had seasons to relish and who else had ones they'd rather forget. Well, isn't this exciting? Very shortly, we will have the inaugural FPL Pod Awards. But before that, let's have a closer look at our panel's standout moments, good and bad, I'm sorry, from their seasons. Sam Parkin, let's start with you now. Avid regular listeners will be able to predict your highlight, I'm sure, and probably your lowlight as well.
Yeah, I mean, the highlight would be the first 2 weeks of the season. Obviously enjoyed the last week, but to be inside the top 3,000, proud moment, proud fantasy football moment for me. And it just started so well. Sterling, hat-trick, opening day. Luka Dina got me 17 points. Even Ndombele fetched me 14 points in the first 2 weeks. So I like to put the new signing in on the opening day, and I'll probably do it again next season, but unfortunately it didn't really transpire particularly well for Ndombele. But yeah, the star term was old Pookie, wasn't it, in the side, and not only got the hat-trick against Newcastle, but I think 12 points against Manchester City, 11 points against Chelsea as well. It was about timing with him because unfortunately he didn't maintain it, so I got him out quite swiftly after that, but I think he fetched me around 60 points, which is not bad going for someone in his inaugural Premier League season.
Would you say that since then has kind of been the low light, or maybe it was your triple captain choice?
I'm not going to go down a triple captain route again because I've got so much respect for Sam Bonfield and Harry Kane. The low light, I was thinking about it this morning, would probably be that October evening when Southampton conceded 9 goals to Leicester and I didn't have any Leicester players in the team. So I was just watching on, annoyed at all my competitors as they got multiple points for Vardy, Perez, Chilwell, etc. And it wasn't until the following week I reacted and finally got some Leicester talent into my lineup. So that was very annoying.
Yeah, I had a very similar feeling on that Friday night as well. I didn't have any Leicester City players either. Sam Bonfield, knowing your incredible season, you probably had a full complement of Leicester players, but was that your highlight or was your highlight elsewhere?
That was one of my highlights. Vardy was my captain that night, so that did go well. But I think for me, my highlight was a bit more generic this year. It's the first season I've ever managed to get all of my chips played at the right point and they've all come off, which is part of how you do well in the game, I guess. It's if you get that chip strategy right, it has a massive impact. Like I triple captain Firmino back in that game week where everyone else had it on Salah and Mane. That worked. In the end, it would have been better elsewhere. But actually, I think the security of having it on Firmino, who started in both games, was so important. And the chip strategy just worked this year. So that was a massive highlight for me. There have been a number of others, none less than Kevin De Bruyne when he started kind of popping up and having kind of got a lot of abuse in the first couple of game weeks when Sterling was doing really well and I didn't own him, to have kind of the the belief that KDB would come good was definitely a highlight.
And I think you're probably going to find it a lot trickier to pick out a lower point, aren't you?
Yeah, I must admit this was a challenge. Like, there's been a few players this season that I've gone, it's been a really tight call on making a decision between a couple of them, and I've gone with the wrong one in the end, and that's been kind of painful. Like at the start of the restart, it was a straight choice between Greenwood and Nketiah, and I went with Nketiah, and I should have gone with Greenwood. I went with Wan-Bissaka at the back instead of Martial. There's been a few kind of 50-50s that I should have done differently. But I think for me, the low light was definitely when the football stopped for a while, because it was like I was sitting on my best ever finish, and it was like, if the season doesn't come back, it feels like it's all been kind of wasted. But we got there in the end, and actually in a way it was better, wasn't it, because Project Restart was so great for us as FPL managers, and it was so intense.
Now, we don't have favourites on this podcast, Sam, but because of course your husband Lee is also a guest on here, but I can't believe that one of your highlights wasn't also beating Lee once again.
Oh, bless him. Yeah, I feel sorry for him, really, because before we started FPL Fantasy...
That's the worst, feeling sorry for him, poor Lee.
I know, bless him. But before we started FPL Family, he beat me every single year, bar one. And so that's like 9 years of beating me. And then we started FPL Family, and it's been 3 years of him coming second. And I think he's starting to get a bit fed up of it now. But he actually had a really good season in the end. So, you know, you can't... It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Well, let's hope he doesn't listen to this podcast, because, Tom, you actually also beat Lee by just 3 points, but I imagine that wasn't your highlight.
It was, actually. No, it wasn't. You know, my highlight, this is going to sound really snide, but my highlight was my decision not to triple captain Sadio Mane in that double game
week. Oh, shut up.
When he only scored 1 point. I was actually at Molineux for the game against Wolves when he got injured, and obviously you never want to see a player get injured, but... At the back of my mind, I did think, from an FPL perspective, this probably isn't the worst thing that could ever happen. But no, I'll pick a more positive highlight. I played my bench boost the first week back after lockdown, surged into the top 40,000, and felt like I was on for a really strong end to the season. Ended up compounding that by using my second wild card the following week, making a bunch of really poorly thought out decisions, but for that one golden week, I felt like I knew exactly what I was doing. So I'm clinging on to that as my highlight of the season.
That was also my highlight, but it lured me into a bit of a false sense of security, I think. What about a slightly more difficult moment for you this season?
Yeah, I mean, there have been plenty, but I sort of look back over my weekly scores, and I remembered that I captained Son Heung-min in game week 18 when he was sent off against Chelsea. So it's one thing to captain someone when they don't score any points, but when captaining them actually costs you to lose points, that's always that's always a particularly low feeling. And yeah, to echo what Sam P was saying, I didn't have any Leicester players when they went and put 9 past Southampton. So that was quite a bleak evening as well.
Well, we are now going on to the main awards. And in the spirit of FPL, we don't give out physical awards. It is all about the pride. Let's be honest, these are the awards that all Premier League players really want to win. We will kick things off with the player that surprised you the most. Tom, who are you going to go for?
I'm going to go with Danny Ings, in that I think we've all known what an excellent footballer he is, but because of the injuries he's had, he's never had a season where he's been able to play regularly and score goals in a way that he did this season. So not a surprise to see him doing that well, but I guess if you look at the context of what came before in his career, you know, we didn't know that he was capable of this, and he proved this season that he was, and I suspect that his price next season will probably reflect what a useful FPL asset he's now become.
I think Southampton probably go down as the team that surprised us the most. We've talked about that 9-0, the fact that they finished just 2 points off a top half finish in the Premier League this season in the end is quite remarkable. Danny Ings started the season at 6 million. He ended at 7.6. A remarkable season. Just missed out, of course, on the Golden Boot. Sam Parkin, you're going to pick out a player that also just missed out on one of the big awards at the end of the season as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Nick Pope. Didn't really play last season at all, injured for the majority of the season. Only 7 clean sheets Burnley kept in the previous campaign. So to keep 15 clean sheets, I think, has taken everyone by surprise. 170 points. That's 37 more than Edison and 48 more than Allison. So incredible season for him. I'm sure a lot of people will be looking at him next season, but you know, considering the season, 4.5 million he started at last season, this season, sorry, and gone up to 5.2. He's gonna cost a fair bit more, but yeah, an outstanding season and one I didn't envisage happening.
Sam Bonfield, do you agree with both of those selections?
I do. Yeah, I think they're both really good picks. I think Danny Ings for me was the standout surprise of this season. I just didn't see that coming at all. I had Shea Adams to start the season because I thought he would be the main attack down there at Southampton. But yeah, Danny Ings has been unbelievable. And to come so close to winning the Golden Boot out of that Southampton side is just frankly an unbelievable season. So yeah, definitely deserves to be kind of the surprise package of the season for sure.
We'll now move on to the best consistent captain pick. Some people call these the kind of set and forget captains. Sam Bonfield, you've kind of sectioned the season out, haven't you? And there were certain players that served you well during certain periods.
Yeah, so one of the things that I normally do is just move my armband around regularly. But this season, there's been kind of, for me, three standout players that have pretty much held my captain's armband for extended periods of time. So Jamie Vardy in that run up until Christmas was just phenomenal. And he kept the armband for, I think it was about 7 weeks on the trot almost, that he was my captain for. Then there was that chunk of time where Danny Ings was just on his unbelievable run of scoring goals. And you could pretty much guarantee that whoever he was playing against, he was going to score. And then since the restart, it's been pretty much set and forget on Bruno Fernandes at Manchester United. Since he arrived in the Premier League, I think it was in game week 25, he's been unbelievable. And since the restart, he's had a couple of blanks in there, but he's more than made up for it in the other game week. So I think there's been some really nice captains options, and thankfully for us as FPL managers, they'd sort of come in different stages of the season, so we could get on board with all of them and benefit from them.
A word on Jamie Vardy as well, because he did win that Golden Boot on the final day despite not scoring. For me, I never really had Jamie Vardy in my team, which perhaps shows why I didn't do as well as I'd have hoped this season. But Tom, for you, for a period as well, he was a reliable captain pick.
Yeah, I didn't have him in for the 9-0 win at Southampton. I've been thinking about bringing him in, and then, along with everyone else in the game, brought him in afterwards. That was right at the start of that run of games where he scored for 8 matches on the trot. And beyond that, apart from a brief flurry sort of just after, well, about halfway through the last bit of the season, he didn't really score all that consistently. But certainly for those few weeks leading up to Christmas, he was a very consistent pick in terms of points returns. And it was also that run of goals that set the platform for him to go on and win the Golden Boot. Because had it not been for that run of form, he wouldn't have been anywhere near it, I don't think, at the end of the season.
Sam, who served you particularly well when you gave them the armband?
It's been a bit of a poison chalice, to be honest, the armband in my side. It's been a hot potato, not that the players probably didn't want it, but I've just been tinkering too much. But yeah, I concur with the guys there. Definitely Vardy during that purple patch. I think game week 9 to 18, 12 goals and recorded another 4 assists. So well over 100 points he got me during that period. That was the only consistency that I showed with my captain's armband. Although when we came to the latter stage of the season and it was almost a toss-up between Salah and Mane, I went for Salah on a couple of occasions and he scored really well for me. So in pockets, okay. But yeah, the only consistent period that I'll look back on with any fondness is when Jamie Vardy went on his hot streak.
Moving on now to the best individual game week of the season. The obvious winner for this one is surely Mikel Antonio, game week 35 plus 26 points, courtesy of his 4 goals in West Ham's 4-0 win at Norwich. But unfortunately, of course, none of us had him, guys. Wish we did. Sam, who is your best individual game week of the season?
So it's quite a personalised one for me, this one. Way back in game week, well, between game weeks 24 and 25, I came on the pod and James asked for my central differential and I said Robert Snodgrass for game week 25 would be a good pick. And my goodness, did that man deliver. So he had a grand total of 18 points that game week. And that is something that for me, I will never forget it. I bought him in the week before because West Ham had that double game week. Didn't really fancy him much in that double game week because I had 2 really tough fixtures. But the game week afterwards was lovely. And yeah, he sat there nice and pretty in my midfield, gave me my best game week rank of the season by a long way. But yeah, for me, he's the absolute standout. It was just one of those picks that when it goes right, you look like a genius, but it could have gone horribly wrong. So it will stand out forever for me.
Sam Parkin, I imagine your best individual game week of the season came a little bit earlier in the season. Am I guessing right?
Yeah, again, Aubameyang, 32 points, final day. I do know someone who did have Antonio that day, Adrian Clarke, who was in our league. He had Antonio and Sterling. And I think Sterling was captain, and I think he got around the same return as Antonio as well. So he had a brilliant week. But yeah, back to that balmy August evening. And Pukki, people are going to start thinking that I'm maybe related to this chap, but I just thought it was... For me, it was my best decision of the season. On the back of the goal at Anfield on the opening day, I just really fancied Norwich at home against Newcastle. First game back in the Premier League in front of the home fans. And he delivered. And some. So 34 points from him on that occasion. And it didn't really get that much better for them. They beat Manchester City, obviously, which was a brilliant result. But in terms of an individual performance and what it did for my team at that stage, it was huge.
Oh, what could have been for both you and Norwich City if Tammy Pukki had kept up that goal-scoring form. Tom, I believe your best individual game week score came in game week 19.
It did. Trent Alexander-Arnold on Boxing Day, Leicester 0, Liverpool 4, 3 assists, a goal, a clean sheet, all the bonus points. He was the only player who I had in my team from game week 1 right through to the end. And while I would have liked him to score and assist as regularly as he did on that particular day, I think that match summed up what a fantastic footballer he is, but also in FPL terms, you know, what a great asset he is, because quite apart from the defensive returns you get from having a Liverpool defender, he's so dangerous with his delivery in wide areas and pops up with the odd goal as well. The odd free kick, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was the peak individual performance of my season.
He ended the season priced 7.7. It's quite scary to think what he could be priced at next season, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the charms, one of the quirks of FPL is that there are always defenders who are priced much more cheaply than midfielders and attackers who end up scoring as much as some of the top priced players, if not more. And I wonder, with Trent Alexander-Arnold, because he's such an incredible attacking force, whether his price next season might reflect his attacking potential. Because, okay, he didn't outscore Liverpool's defenders by a massive margin, but, you know, you can only see him becoming more of a threat as the seasons go on, and I suspect we will see that recognised in his price.
Yeah, he did end up 29 points ahead of fellow fullback Andy Robertson and also ahead of Virgil van Dijk. So, yeah, Trent Alexander-Arnold was the Liverpool defender to have, but he was also the most expensive. Now, talking of players whose prices are probably going to go up next season, the next award is for One Season Wonder, which actually sounds a bit cruel, but we're actually maybe... It's another surprise package, I guess, but there's only surely one candidate for this, Sam Bonfield.
Oh, for sure. And unfortunately, you know, he will still be in the Premier League next season, so we can still pick him, but his game time will be limited and he will surely be reclassified as a midfielder as opposed to a defender. It has to be Lord Lundstrom for this one. He was unbelievable in that early part of the season. His points hauls were just ridiculous. It was that kind of goal scoring, assist bringing, clean sheet keeping genius that was Lindstrom, and it's rare that you get a player like him that is not quite positioned correctly in the game. So he should have been a midfielder, he was a defender. We all just lapped it up while we could, but with their new signings at Sheffield United, his game time has been more limited, and unfortunately, yeah, I would expect to see him in the midfield next year rather than in defence.
We also asked you over on Twitter at OfficialFPL what your highlights were. And there were some really good ones in here as well. Some that I'm not sure if I completely believe, or maybe I'm just a little bit jealous. Rob said, Kane this week, I captained him taking a hit and won my league. Sam Bonfield, Kane showed us and Spurs at the end of the season just why we can't ignore him in FPL, didn't he?
Oh, I love that man. He turns up always at the end of the season. He particularly loves playing Leicester. So I kind of flagged him on the FPL show a few weeks ago, because that game week against Leicester in 37, I thought he'd do well. And the final game of the season, he always bangs. You can kind of guarantee some points from Harry Kane. And yeah, he absolutely delivered again. Good news for him, no August fixtures for him this season, straight in September. So surely we're starting with a bang again.
Is he going to be straight in your team?
Oh yeah, of course.
Of course. I'm surprised he's been out of your team for so long this season. Maybe, Sam, that's the reason you did so well, but I know you won't even want to contemplate that. Next up, we had this in from Shep, who I think must have read this slightly wrong, because he says his best FPL transfer, his highlight, was Mane in for the double game week, triple captain in him, for him to get injured 32 minutes in the first game for a total of 3 points. Now, Tom already mentioned he was at that game. I did this. This was where I think my season all went completely wrong. I remember exactly where I was sitting at home when I was watching it on TV and it happened. You guys, none of you did it. You're all very lucky, because that was a hideous game week. But Sam, I know your husband, Lee, I feel very sorry for Lee on this podcast, because this was another slight mistake he made as well.
Yeah, he did this. He triple captain Mane, I triple captain Firmino. And we sat there and I remember feeling absolutely gutted for him, because it's one of those things that when you look forward so much to playing a chip and you spend so much time thinking about who you're going to trust with that captain's armband. And it was not a bad decision to captain Mane. It's not like he blanked. He just got a really unfortunate injury, which kept him out of the games. Yeah, it was gutting. So if you did that, wow, it's just painful.
And of course, he's a Liverpool fan as well. Now, this is the tweet that I'm not sure if I believe. If, Paolo, this is correct, then I think you need to give us the lottery numbers, because you said he free-hitted in the 35-plus week, bringing in Antonio for his 4 goals against Norwich and Sterling for 3 goals against Brighton. He won the round in his mini-league and it was decisive to finish in the podium. And he says he won't forget that. I am not surprised he will not forget that, Sam Parkin.
No, that's exactly the call that I was talking about, that Clarkie in our league did. So, yeah, Sterling and Antonio in that week was just unbelievable if you made those two decisions. Unfortunately, I don't think I had either, but I definitely didn't have Antonio. And Sterling, I've kind of not been picking and gone for Kevin De Bruyne in the latter weeks of the season. So, yeah, I'm not too disappointed about Antonio, because I think that was just a bit of a stab in the dark. But well done if you produced, and good on him, because he had a great end to the season.
It's amazing, isn't it, how annoying it can be when someone in one of your mini leagues has a really good game week. Even if you yourself have had a decent game week, if someone you know has had an even better game week, particularly off the back of a fluke decision like bringing in Antonio for a match like that, it can really put a dampener on things. I feel like it's the moment when FPL comes as close as it ever does to, you know, the feeling of supporting a team, when you're sort of taking pleasure in your rival's downfall and equally, you know, feeling hurt when they do well. I certainly had that quite a few times.
Having all been mocked unceremoniously by Julien Laurent at some stage during this season, we'll just be hoping that he doesn't do anything good at all next season, and we never have to be jealous of any of his selections.
It's a shame we didn't get him on, actually. He could have discussed how his team sank like a stone over the second half of the campaign.
We'll have to see him
up for the preview pod.
He was very much the French tourism board last week, and he was the one, I think, really, that persuaded me to bring in Anthony Martial over Bruno Fernandes. So I wouldn't have allowed him on this podcast this week, that's for sure. Anyway, finally, James also said, when Rashford got injured, I brought in Danny Ings and the rest was history. He won me my mini league. We've waxed lyrical already about Danny Ings, Sam Bonfield. He's just a brilliant asset and he was brilliant for us this season.
He was. And I think he is one of those players that he's never going to cost you that much money in terms of FPL, because he's coming out of that Southampton side. So he's never going to break your bank affording him. And that's exactly what you want when you're looking for a second striker. You ideally want to have a bit of money invested in the front one, the first one, whether that be Aubameyang or Kane or Vardy this for most of this season. But Danny Ings, my goodness, what value is in him and what an amazing FPL asset he has been all season. For me, I thought he was so unlucky not to get a share in that golden boot. He could have had so many more than he did, particularly in game week 38.
What's scary is you talk about his price not being too much. I am scared as to what his price is going to be next season. Well, thank you to everyone who has replied to all of the tweets we have put out so far this season. And a big congratulations to all of our worthy FPL pod winners as well. And of course, Kevin De Bruyne, the new king dethroning Mo Salah. That is enough looking back, though, because there is no rest for the wicked with such a short break between seasons. Now it's time to look forwards. Now, this is the ones to watch section. Let's kick things off by talking about who ended the season strongly. I feel like Bruno Fernandes, Tom, is the first name that's going to be on so many managers' team sheets next season.
Yeah, I mean, as we've discussed, from the second that he set foot on the pitch at Old Trafford, he's been super, super reliable as an FPL asset. I think the only thing that would potentially discourage you from picking Fernandes is if United have a really difficult set of fixtures at the start of the season. But then, you know, he's shown in his short time in this country already how effective he can be. The fact he's on penalties as well and is a very assured, very consistent penalty taker. He'll certainly be one of the first players who I pick next season. And again, as you say, I think because there's such a short turnaround between seasons, I think anyone who has ended the season strongly is worth considering for next season. One player who I'm going to be looking at for sure is Christian Pulisic, who I thought had a really successful first season at Chelsea. Didn't seem to take all that long to settle. The only thing that's really held him back has been injuries. And, you know, he's shown what a dangerous player he can be. Super quick, great first touch, scores with both feet, and will have a season behind him of bedding in and getting to know his teammates. The only slight concern with him is that Timo Werner, who Chelsea are bringing in, likes to operate in a similar area of the pitch, so they'll have to develop some kind of understanding. But yeah, from what I've seen of Pulisic this season, I think he's definitely one worth looking at.
We know Chelsea already have a very good attack. We've all benefited from the likes of Pulisic. But Sam Parkin, are you looking at any of their new signings that they've already made at this stage?
Yeah, I echo what Tom says. Werner, certainly. I think because of his versatility, he's going to get in that front line, either on the left or as the central striker. So I touched on it earlier. I always like to go with one of the new, glamorous new signings on the opening day of the season. I think dating back to probably when I was a teenager and started playing Fantasy League football. So yeah, I always want to get one in, and he'll probably be the one that I plump for. Another name that I've had in my side in recent weeks, Phil Foden. And I think without David Silva moving forward, obviously he's had a really good amount of game time towards the tail end of this season, 5 goals and an assist in the 10 games. I know he's still only 20, and I don't fully trust Pep Guardiola to kind of put his eggs all in that basket, but I hope he does, and I hope Foden gets regular game time, and you'd like to think you could pick him up relatively cheaply.
We are all talking about lots of midfielders here, Sam Bonfield. Liverpool and City for the past couple of seasons have been the ones that we go for straight away, but does that show that there's actually now so many more options for us in FPL that it won't necessarily be go straight away for Mo Salah, for example?
I think so. I think the thing that puts me off with, obviously, Man City, we've all known about the Pep roulette for years and years, and that will never change. I fear Chelsea might be a bit similar this season in terms of they have so many good out attacking players now that there could be some rotation there. So I think you will obviously want to pick the likes of Salah and Sterling and Fernandes. They make obvious picks. So for me, one of the names that I'm really looking at moving forward into next season is Saint-Maximin at Newcastle. I think he will offer great value for money. He has been brilliant since the restart. Hasn't necessarily had the points hauls that you would want, but the game time is there. His commitment and his pace, he's suddenly got up to speed with the Premier League. He gets the game now. He's been so improved since the restart. So I think that will transfer into Premier League points, fancy Premier League points next season. And so he's one that I'll be looking at using to enable me to have all of these big hitters that Tom and Sam were just talking about.
Well, there is still plenty of time for Premier League teams to sign new players for us to ponder over. We also know that Leeds and West Bromwich Albion will be coming up from the Championship. The final team is still to be decided. It'll either be Swansea, Cardiff, Fulham or Brentford. Sam Parkin, I know you've been keeping a keen eye on these playoffs. I'm not asking you to predict who's going to come up, but I'm kind of asking you already to look at players, maybe from Leeds and West Brom, who we should be looking at.
Leeds is difficult. Obviously, they've kept a really good amount of clean sheets. Defensively, been great, but it's quite an even spread of goals. There's not one candidate standing out for me who I'd go for. West Brom, I think that's a bit of a no-brainer. Matias Pereira, 8 goals, 20 assists in the Championship this season. So if you can transfer that to the Premier League in a position that he plays as a number 10, I think he'll play the majority of the games. I think everything will go through him. He'll be the fulcrum. So he could be someone to pick up for a very low price. You can guarantee that he's going to be the source of a lot of West Brom goals. And the playoffs, obviously some lovely options if Brentford were to make it. Benrahma, whether he'll be there or not, still someone that a lot of people may go for, even if he's at a Leicester or a Chelsea. And Ollie Watkins, second top goal scorer in the division, in the new stadium at Brentford. It would be a hell of a story. And there'll be some decent forward players there that people will be tempted by. And finally, Mitrovic, obviously, if Fulham were to come back, there's a guarantee return. And with Scott Parker getting them better defensively, you'd like to think that Fulham will make a better fist of it if they can get back to the promised land.
I always quite enjoy it when the prices come out, looking at the defenders who you think are going to start for the newly promoted teams and trying to find those cheap gems, the 4.5 million or the 4 million defenders. They are brilliant for our benches. And then, as we saw with Sheffield United, often they end up being regulars in our side. Right, you've already told me a little bit about who's going to be on your team sheet, but I'm going to ask you now. This is the stage of the podcast where I'd normally ask you for your transfers or your captains, but I'm going to ask you now, who is going to be the first name on your team sheet as it stands for next season? Tom, who would yours be?
I think Kevin De Bruyne probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he's returned to top form this season, having almost not played at all the previous season. He's shown what a dangerous player he is. I think what made him particularly attractive this season from an FPL perspective was that because of the trouble he had the season before, his price was much lower than it should have been. He'll probably be up there with the most expensive assets in the game for next season. But at the same time, I think it's a no-brainer. You know, he's the man that makes them tick, and he is the one player who manages to withstand the ravages of the Pep roulette, in that he starts almost every game and basically runs the show. So yeah, KDB for me.
He has played the most minutes of any outfield player for Manchester City this season. What about you, Sam Parkin? Who are you? I get the feeling this is already going to be someone very rogue.
No, I'm going to go Fernandes, Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
Already spoke about previous fantasy league seasons. Remember having David Unsworth every week for years because he took penalties. Now, that's, you know, a good reason to have Fernandes. And just the guy's whole character, the way he's walked into Old Trafford and just seems to be orchestrating the proceedings. 8 goals and 8 assists in, what, 14 games or something. It's been an incredible return. And I just see that continuing. If they can build defensively, they'll have a more successful season. And he's guaranteed to be at the forefront of that. So I think I'm going to go for him, even if his price goes up 4 or 5 million quid.
Yeah, I think his price will go up quite a bit. He started when he came in game week 25. He was just 8 million. By the end of the season, he was 9. 117 points for him, owned by almost 30% of FPL managers in the end. Sam Bonfield, what about you? And I feel like I want you to tell me my whole team to pick, to be honest.
So I always like to start with somebody that I think is guaranteed game time, guaranteed starts. And for me, I can't look any further than Trent Alexander-Arnold at the back for Liverpool. So seems like a strange place to start, but I think he offers so much better value than a lot of the midfielders, because he's not only got those amazing free kicks in his locker, he's up there with the assist count every year. And not only that, Liverpool keep a lot of clean sheets. So for me, it doesn't matter whether he's going to be, and I think he might be, the most expensive game the defender has ever seen. I think it's Leighton Baines at the moment, started the season at 8, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see Trent start at 8.5 even, maybe. He will be the first name on my team sheet. And then there'll be some cheap ones in there. I'm very much looking at the Leeds win backs as my kind of enabling me to have such an expensive defender in Trent. But yeah, for me, Trent, first name on my team sheet.
Also, this is a good time of the season, isn't it? Although we don't have long till the next season, to kind of look back on what we've learnt from the season, any lessons and any things we're going to do differently for next season. For me, so many things. And every season I have this conversation with myself and I'm sure I just don't learn. Sam Parkin, is your lesson maybe just not to get quite so carried away early on?
Yeah, I mean, hold the triple captain back for a double game week or even better for the final knockings of the season. Probably can say the same about the free hit, just went far too early on those two. But the biggest takeaway, and I know it's not a chip, I had a little look this morning, I made 66 substitutions.
Oh.
Now the fantasy football royalty that we've got alongside us today, Sam made, I think, 41 around that number. So I gave away 100 points, basically, to my competitors, which is a harsh lesson that I've learned. It's not big or clever to pretend that you're Claudio Ranieri, and I shall not be tinkering at all next season. I'll be sticking with my boys.
Tom, what about you? What is the one thing you are going to do differently, or maybe something you've done this season that's worked really well for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of stuck to the same format in recent seasons of using the first wild card quite early on and then holding all the other chips for as long as possible. As it happens, I kind of cocked up my triple captain choice on the last day of the season. And as Sam B was alluding to earlier, it can be fiddly using a chip for the last weekend because you get managers like Jurgen Klopp deciding he's not going to pick any of his big name players for the last week. And you don't want to find yourself a hostage to fortune. But I think the main takeaway for me is that I really like having as many big name attackers and midfielders in my team as possible. And sometimes I push it a bit too far and end up having to pick really cheap defenders and take massive punts on people. And when I look at slightly more established FPL managers, what I'd notice is that every player in their team has obvious point scoring potential. They're not sort of hoping that Watford, no offence Kelly, but are going to fluke a clean sheet somewhere unexpectedly because they know it's probably not going to happen.
I don't take offence, don't worry. I never ever had Watford players in my team, even when they did well, because I'm superstitious. But that didn't really affect me because they just didn't do very well. So it's fine.
Yeah, well, I made the mistake after, so I used my second wild card in the second week after the restart, and I was fairly sure that Watford were going to get at least a few home clean sheets. Brought in Adam Messina, who's also quite useful going forward. And then because I had a bit of a nightmare on the last day with Willian being injured and Saka not getting off the bench for Arsenal, so I ended up with Messina on the pitch. And that felt like a sort of, a symbol of my overreaching in pursuit of a top-heavy lineup. So that's something I'm going to have to rethink for next season.
Well, unless Adam Messina gets a surprise move to another Premier League club, you will not have that problem next season. Sam Bonfield, let's end this podcast with your tips, because I feel like all of the listeners by now will know they really need to be listening to you. Not that they shouldn't be listening to Tom or Sam Parkin, but what would your overriding message to fantasy managers ahead of the next season, which really isn't too far away, be?
Pens at the ready.
So I actually think that Sam hit the nail on the head there with what he was saying. I think transfers are so important. So I limit the amount of transfers that I take every year. I try and roll every other week so that I've always got two. And it means that I'm always in a position where if there is a player I want and I can't get them, I don't have to take a hit for it because I've got that extra place that I can make changes through. But I think for me, for the start of next season, the key is in building your team value. It's so important at the beginning of the season to get on those players that do really well so that your team is worth more. By the time then you want to use your chips in the blank and double game weeks, which inevitably come later in the season, you have enough money that you can afford all of these guys that we've just been talking about now, the really expensive characters that you want. And the other thing that I did differently this season was I didn't play my early wild card until the very last week that it was possible to play it. And actually, that was a massive bonus for me. It swung things in my favour because it meant I could make those changes for just after Christmas when there was a bit of a fixture shift and things started to change. And it worked really, really well. So that's something I'm going to be trying to do this season. I'll be using my transfers wisely and limiting how many I make between the beginning of the season and the end of that final wildcard window, and then wildcarding as late as possible.
Well, I think we have just discovered the one thing that I did do the same as Sam this season, leaving my first wildcard until it was very, very late. But alas, nothing else went the same way for me as it did for Sam. That is all we have got time for on today's podcast. We can all breathe easy with no imminent deadlines looming. It has been quite dramatic, hasn't it? But as we have discussed, there are less than 50 days to go until the next Premier League and FPL season begins. So do keep an eye on PremierLeague.com for all the latest FPL news and, of course, the all-important price reveals. It won't be long until we are back agonising over transfers, rueing those missed points and begging FPL for more chips. A huge thanks to our final panel of the season, the FPL Queen Sam Bonfield, Sam Parkin, and Tom Williams. And on behalf of everyone here at the FPL podcast, a huge thank you to you guys for sharing the highs and the lows, and most of all, for listening to us all every single week. Keep yourself safe, and we'll see you in just a few weeks' time.